It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for. Hey, Sandy Rios with you this morning on Thursday, and so much news. You know there is, there always is. Before I give the news, I want to tell you I'm going to be in Houston Friday and Saturday for the Stand for Truth Conference. For those of you down there, you still have time to sign up. Go to Stand for Truth, Stand for Truth. And Dr. Jeffress will be there. Dave Welch is part of the Houston Five. It's going to be a wonderful meeting. We're going to be talking about LGBT issues. And the politically incorrect truth about sexuality and gender. It's going to be pretty interesting, so I hope you'll come and join us. But I wanted to jump in here tonight. It's not tonight. It's actually today. It's this morning. And just, you know that Megyn Kelly and Newt Gingrich got into quite a spat, and I was watching it live when it happened, and you heard my voice at the top of the hour, and I just have more to say about that, and I want to jump in because I didn't have a chance to talk about it yesterday. First of all, I'd like to sort of correct the record. There are far more than five or six women who have allegations against Bill Clinton. I have interviewed probably five or six of them myself. There is a vault of information that is massive, accusations going back to Bill Clinton's time at Oxford. It's an unbelievable story, and it's stories of not just flirting, kissing inappropriately. It's stories of sexual assault and rape. So I'm not defending Donald Trump on his boorishness, but the thing that I did say that you did not hear is that Donald Trump, from my perspective, if I had to describe him, as a hound dog, men like women, men apart from Christ just crave women, and they sometimes act on it. This is the nature of man. That's not unnatural. When men then go to criminal acts, criminal assaults, and I think we've lost the line of where that is in our current culture, when they actually rape women and do some of the things that we have read that Bill Clinton has actually done, and not just talk, things that have actually been done, it's very disingenuous for Megyn then to call Donald Trump a sexual predator and refuse to do the same for Bill Clinton and be concerned about if she is, thinks that all of those allegations are true and it's the same level of sexual criminality that Bill Clinton is known for. She has no problem with Bill Clinton being back in the White House. That's not an issue to her. And of course, she didn't even address the issue of Mrs. Clinton's involvement in destroying the women that her husband sexually assaulted. So it's really sordid. I mean, I get a lot of criticism because people want to rush to say that Donald Trump is a sexual predator, whatever words they use, whatever Megyn used. And I think that he might well have been in some ways. I just think he's more of a hound dog who's out of control. He's a sinful, virulent, handsome, rich man who acted out on that. I don't think that, as far as I can tell, there was no criminal activity. It's not the case with Bill Clinton. So Newt Gingrich was right to challenge Megyn on that. Megyn is overstating it, and she has played the undercover video of Donald Trump with Bush, whatever his first name is, over and over and over and over again. And Newt was trying to make the point that you're not talking about issues, you're talking about sex. Why are you doing that? And so there. I mean, I know there's a lot more to say about that. I'm sure you'd love to call, but I don't have time this morning. But I just wanted to set the record straight on that. I think Newt was right to challenge Megyn. I think Megyn is sort of got a blind spot where this is concerned, and she sort of revealed herself not to be as honest a broker as we want her to be in all things. And so that's the end of my discussion on that. All right, CBS did a report on what's happening on the southern border. I want you to hear it.
Unaccompanied children at the U.S. border are up nearly 50%. Manuel Bajorquez found out why.
Every day, dozens of men, women, and children stream through the streets of McAllen, Texas, to this migrant center at Sacred Heart Catholic Church. They've just illegally crossed into the U.S. and have been released by Border Patrol with ankle monitors while they file for asylum. Brenda Aguilar fled Honduras.
Allá no hay oportunidad de trabajo.
They're a single mother looking for work.
Vine a buscar una oportunidad aquí para darle una mejor vida a mis hijos.
And also to flee the violence in Honduras.
Sí.
We're getting mass spikes of people crossing and turning themselves in.
Agent Chris Cabrera is with the local Border Patrol Union. He says on some days, they've encountered up to 1,000 immigrants along this stretch of the border.
What's driving them?
The smugglers are telling them if Hillary gets elected, that there'll be some type of amnesty, so they need to get here by a certain date. They're also being told that if Trump gets elected, there's going to be some magical wall that pops up overnight. And once that wall gets up, nobody will ever get in again.
Something
All right, so then I'm going to interrupt the report since I took so much time talking in the opening, but you get the message. And they are flooding across. You can see it in the report. They're flooding down the streets of McAllen. Of course, this Catholic charity is taking them in and then just releasing them to the public. We've talked about this a number of times. There are attorneys, you know, assigned to them to provide legal counsel. And they get all of these benefits. They're putting these beautiful, brand-new homes paid for by your tax dollars, shelters. It's an amazing story. It truly is. You heard Chris Cabrera just quoted on that CBS report, but LifeSet also did an interview with Chris, and he said the federal authorities don't seem to take it seriously. I mean, he's talking about the Obama administration. They don't seem to take it seriously. They seem to look at immigration violations like a traffic ticket. That is not really a big deal. And it is a big deal, especially for the fact that there are a lot of people coming across with criminal history into the United States. And one really tangible net result of this that we already know, in 2014, mothers in the United States illegally gave birth to 275,000 babies. Now, that's 2014. That means that was 7% of all the births in 2014. And that would make up a city the size of Orlando, Florida, just to give you an idea. And that was 2 years ago. So we have a problem, Houston, we have a problem. And so there it is. You know that Obamacare premiums are absolutely ballooning out of control. We've already known this, but now this is 2016. So the new regulations that they set in place when they passed this law are setting in, and the shock, the sticker shock for people is unbelievable. Arizona, the premiums are going up 116%, North Carolina 40%, and on we could go. So the premiums are going up, and the deductibles are going up, and it's like some people are saying they have their deductible is as high as $5,000 a year. Now, what kind of insurance, what kind of worthless insurance does that? Why would you even have insurance? Well, you'd have it because you are forced to buy it. This Obamacare forces you to pay to be insured. And so it is a complete trap. The architect of this was Ezekiel Emanuel. Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel is the brother of Rahm Emanuel, who was very involved in the Obama administration and went back to Chicago and ran for mayor. Well, Ezekiel Emanuel was on MSNBC, of all things, yesterday. Listen as the host, Stephanie Rules, her name, quizzes him on this, and listen to his response.
I am now joined by one of the architects of the Affordable Care Act, Dr. Zeke Emanuel. He's the chair of the Medical Ethics and Health Policy at the University of Pennsylvania. Why should Americans have faith in the Affordable Care Act?
So let me raise 2 points. First of all, for those people who are getting insured on the exchanges, that 22% price rise is for the premium, but 83% of them get subsidies, and for those people who are getting subsidies, the vast majority of people, there will be no real change in their premiums because they get subsidies and the subsidies are linked to the premium increases.
But
so
Dr.
in fact,
Emanuel,
for most people, it's not a big
confusing.
It's not a big increase. Let me make a second point, which is...
All right, I'm going to interrupt him. He's going to talk about how medical care costs are down to all-time lows. Nothing to see here. You know, it reminds me when Jonathan Gruber, who was the architect of Obamacare, remember he was... there was a recording of him making a statement, like teaching in a class, briefing people, and he said, the reason we're going to be able to pass this law, or the reason we were able to pass it, is because the American people are so stupid. Yeah, so that's what Jonathan Gruber said, who was the architect of Obamacare. And here's the thing, Dr. Emanuel just said 83% of them get subsidies. Well, who do you think's going to pay those subsidies? You think the subsidies fall from the sky free? You know, there's free money just falling from the sky to give people subsidies. 83% of the people signed up on Obamacare. No, it's going to be middle class. It isn't going to be the rich people because they have their own elite, special, separate plans. And it's not going to be the poor people because they're the ones getting subsidies. It is the middle class of America and small business owners whose backs are breaking and will be broken. And it's interesting that we are talking about this because in the next segment, Rich Higgins is going to join me. And we're going to talk about this long game of the left. What is the left? Rich will tell you that we're at war. Well, what does that look like? And how do we know? And what's going on here? Is it just the surface things we're seeing? Or is there some longer strategy? And we're going to talk about that with Rich when he joins us. Where to go next? Interesting. I want to throw this in. Julian Assange was on tape recently. I don't know the source. I just have the writer. It's Rory Grant. Julian Assange, of course, has been behind the WikiLeaks leaks. But in a really interesting interaction with him, remember he's holed up in the, I think it's the Ecuadorian embassy in England, I believe. And he has talked about being fearful for his life. You remember that there was a young man here in D.C. just a few months ago in the summer who was murdered on the street, 27 years old. He was in part of the DNC. There was no robbery. Nothing was taken. And yet he was shot in the head, and that was it. And it's funny that Julian Assange in this video says that the Russians were not the ones who have given him the information. It's insiders of the DNC who are upset about what they're seeing. And he was asked if Seth Rich was one of them. He mentions Seth Rich. He volunteers it. And they say, are you saying Seth Rich was your source? And he's saying, we never reveal our sources, but we're very concerned about this because this is the danger that people get into when they reveal their information. And he goes on and on about this, never saying out loud or plainly that Seth Rich was the one that leaked email to him, but hinting it in a major way and saying it was not the Russians. I just think that in itself is fascinating. We'll talk maybe with Rich about that also. In terms of voting, you remember we told you yesterday, I believe it was yesterday or 2 days ago, that one of the counties in Texas was reporting that people were voting straight ticket Republican, and it was switching to Clinton-Cain. And so one of the Texas counties has switched to paper ballots after these electronic voting glitches. In fact, our Chambers County Clerk Heather Hawthorne issued a press release Tuesday. And the reason she said she voted herself and it switched. And so they went to paper ballots. Now they claim the ballots are the voting machines are fixed and they're back to electronic. But there are other reports. Voters in Arlington and Amarillo are complaining that when they did the same thing, it switched to Clinton-Cain. Election officials in Texas are denying there's a problem. Of course, they always do deny there's a problem. In Denver, CBS4 has found that they're finding people who have voted twice around the state or are voting twice. And so I guess the takeaway from this is when you vote, early voting has already started in many states. Just be diligent. Make sure that your ballot says what it's you meant for it to say. Make sure you don't see anything fishy in your voting place. And if you do, shout it from the housetops. That's all I can say. Because if there's a new administration, a new Justice Department, voter fraud will be punished. It will be prosecuted. And so you could even just share that information. If you see people committing voter fraud, you might tell them that that's illegal and you are putting yourself in jeopardy, especially illegal immigrants. If they want to become citizens and they have a felony on their record, or some sort of a charge like that, it would not comport to their best interests. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
This is Max Licato. Out in a fishing boat, empty and exhausted, Peter discovered the wonder of God's second chance. The crowd on the beach was so great that Jesus needed a buffer, so he preached from Peter's boat, and he told Peter to take him fishing. Well, the apostle, the P, was tired. He had fished all night. He had caught nothing. He was dubious. What did Jesus know about catching fish? And Peter was self-conscious. People packed the beach. Who wants to fail in public? But Jesus insisted, and Peter relented. At your word, I will let down the net. This was a moment of truth for Peter. He was saying, I will try again, your way. And when he did, the catch of fish was so great the boat nearly sank. And sometimes we just need to try again with Jesus in the boat. Failures are fatal only if we fail to learn from them. This is Max Licato.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. Republicans fear they may lose the House and the Senate on Election Day. If that happens, they have no one to blame but themselves. Years ago, they said they could not stop President Obama because they did not control the House. So voters gave them control of the House. Then they said they needed control of the Senate. So voters gave them control of the Senate. But Republicans were still unwilling to stand up to the president. They said they needed a Republican in the White House. So delegates gave them Donald Trump. But instead of getting behind the nominee, many establishment Republicans are trying to sabotage his candidacy, in effect ensuring Hillary Clinton wins the White House. If that happens, why should voters return Republicans to power in Congress? They'll do the exact same thing they did under President Obama, capitulate. To borrow a phrase from Hillary, what difference does it make? I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
But the left, it's important to realize what's going on, right? They're trying to get a few large firms to run every sector. Healthcare, a few large insurance agents, a few large hospitals, a few large banks, because then the left can control the entire economy. Now they control 1/6 of the economy called healthcare. They're doing the same thing in finance, banking, et cetera. The small guy is being put out of business systematically. They know that. You don't have to own the means of production anymore. You just have to regulate it. And so that's why you have the executive branch doing this executive overreach. They are controlling the economy by regulatory fiat. Oh, it's a huge game changer, and it's systematic of what's going on and what you should expect from Hillary if she were to win. This is the game plan, right? Centralized power in Washington, D.C., contrary to the 10th Amendment, where all power is supposed to go to the states and to the people. And Republicans have to do a better job of messaging what's actually going on. And even on my own side, right, there's been a huge reaction now. The Trump phenomenon, 80% of outsider voters on the Republican side, we're running a $600 billion deficit. and we're not fighting on behalf of the American people. So when leadership comes back, I hope to see a pivot on our side, and I hope to see them saying we're going to fight for the American people, because that's what the American people are demanding right now.
That's the voice of Congressman Dave Brat, familiar to this show, and he was interacting with Neil Cavuto yesterday. They were talking about Obamacare and the increase in premiums and the destruction of it and sort of the move to single payer. But the point I wanted you to hear, which you did, was that Dave is saying the left is at work. They're consolidating power. They already have health insurance will give them a sixth of the nation's economy, and they want more. So we talk about the left all the time, the left, the left, the left. And I talk to you about these grand schemes in broad terms because I'm not sure I can get my hands around it. But there are some among us who have the brain and the experience to wrap their hands around what is actually going on underneath. And my next guest is one of those. He's been with us before. It's always a pleasure to have his time. His name is Rich Higgins. He's the Vice President of Intelligence and National Security for RED, or RED LLC. It's a company that develops, tests, and evaluates new combat abilities for special operations, intelligence, and irregular warfare missions. Let me go on to say that Rich is an expert on the nexus between theological doctrines and information age unconventional warfare. He spent 20 years combating terrorism. He's worked with special ops. He's advised the White House, the Congress, the foreign governments, and I could go on and on, as you can see. I could go on and on. But, Rich, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's always a privilege.
Hey, good morning, Sandy. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I heard you say yesterday in a briefing that we are at war, and I heard you make this statement. You said politics is war without bloodshed, and war is politics with bloodshed. You really believe we're at war?
I think this election is probably unprecedented. It may be analogous to, you know, Lincoln coming in and the death of the Whig Party, but we see in the Democrat, you know, in the Democratic Party now, the capitulation to what I would term an international Marxist Hegelian cabal pushing this globalist agenda, and they've been at work. And this is what the American people need to understand. These folks have been at work for 100 years in our society. When the Russian Revolution happened, you had the Bolsheviks, who were revolution now, you know, violent. And then you had the Mensheviks, which was slow subversion over time. Well, Lenin won out, and the Bolsheviks eventually took down the government, but the Menshevik approach probably would have been more effective, and that's what we see happening in our society today.
And let me just stop to say, I think one way my listeners could understand that, Rich, is the way I understand it. When we talk about, for instance, as a comparison, just the concept, in Islam, we have radical Islam that wages war and beheads people, and then we have civilization jihad, which we've talked a great deal about at this microphone, about the undercurrent, taking over, taking power behind the scenes, usurping, you know, getting right. positions of power. And so that's what you're saying. Bolsheviks were the violent. Right. Mensheviks are the people that take over more gradually.
Right. In my role working for the government, we would track and monitor movements in other countries. And when you're looking at influence or subversion type, you know, subversive type warfare, there are four principal target groups that you'd be watching: students and youth, labor, media, and elites. And if you look at those groups in the United States, you know, think about the state of our universities and our educational institutions, the state of our labor unions, the state of our media, and the state of our elites. I mean, most of them have bought into this globalist, multiculturalist narrative that is, you know, if it's participative at all in the American political philosophy, it's deformed. I personally think it's the subversive antithesis of it. And, you know, so what we see happening is when you ally yourself ideologically to this globalist narrative, you know, and I heard David Brat's comment on the Tenth Amendment is just not a concern to them. Neither is the First Amendment, as they go about building their counterstate. And they'll do it through extra-legal means, meaning the counterstate exists outside of the government authority that the people have given to them. So they'll take a corporate approach, which is where you'll see groups like Google and Facebook that will be implementing speech codes outside of any sort of government control. It is really, truly a frightening time.
It is, and we're going to come back to that specific about Facebook and their recent advertisement. We'll come back to that. But you know what this reminds me of, Rich, is I try to kind of, I talk about the left a lot. And so I say to myself, you know, all right, so how would I define that? Would you say, I mean, I would say this, but would you say this, that this whole mindset does trace back to Lenin? Is there anything before Lenin's time that discusses this same kind of strategy that you just mentioned, going after students and youth and labor and media and elites? Is there anything before that?
Well, I think, I mean, you can read Machiavelli, you can read Mao. You know, the quote you gave earlier was a one that I had borrowed from Mao. I think the person that really drives a lot of what we see today is Hegel. For the political science people in the audience, German political philosopher, worth reading because his argument about thesis and antithesis was then later applied by Marx to the economy. But Hegel's argument is that all ideas are thesis, and they are, you know, met in truth by antithesis, and, you know, you get a product from that. The problem is when you have an absolute truth. You know, the American political founding is an absolute truth. You know, if you believe everybody's entitled to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, those are immutable principles with rights bestowed to you by God. There is no antithesis to that, right? And I think the attack that the left is making on the American political philosophy happens at that level. It's transcendent. It's not just an economic attack. It's an attack on identity. It's an attack on culture. It's an attack on the core idea. And it's something that, while it seems academic and kind of, you know, superfluous to the average person, I think people sense it in their gut. They know something's wrong, and they have a hard time articulating it sometimes. But what you see in, I think, Trump is a political organizational structure that is emerging that, while Mr. Trump didn't create it, he finds himself at the head of it right now. And it was because he spoke truths about immigration, about national security, about Islam, that frankly nobody else was even willing to say. And in my mind, he's a hero for doing it.
You know, Rich, to sort of give this context, because I remember, because I came up through the Cold War, because I lived in Berlin, because I traveled in every communist country, with the exception of Cuba, I've had a lot of interactions with people behind the Iron Curtain when it was still there. And I recently did an interview with a woman from Romania, Virginia Prodan. We're going to play her interview in the next few days. And she said to me, she grew up as a communist in Romania. Of course, Romania was part of the communist bloc. And she said to me, she said the thing that, she was a communist, her family was communist, she became an attorney, she's a very bright woman, very successful in Romania at the time. She said to me, you know, I grew up and I just always wondered, well, what is truth? What's truth? I don't know what truth is. And to just take a sidebar, I remember being in the Soviet Union before it broke up in 1990 doing interviews. I was there for 2 weeks. And it was just the time when they were beginning to open up, and people were so confused because they'd been taught so many lies for 60 years, they didn't know what the truth was. So back to Virginia. She grows up, she's saying to me, I always wanted to know, well, what's the truth? What is truth? And so in her case, somebody, a client, twisted her arm and talked her into going to one of the underground churches, and she went to church. And this is the pastor stood up, and the scripture verse that day was I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. And Virginia, who'd never been in church, goes, are you kidding me? In the middle of church. But the point is that she was so hungry just to know truth. What's truth? And I think that whereas maybe 20 years ago, Americans couldn't understand that because we lived in a nation that was, for the most part, there was a lot of truth speaking. Now we live in an era of lies where I believe even the millennials don't really know what truth is. Would you agree with that?
I think it's important. A, yes, Sandy, I agree with it. And B, it is the intended outcome of a hostile campaign being put forward by an international Marxist cabal. And that cabal is represented in the current political election by Hillary Clinton and her surrogates and the people who will fulfill her administration. So to show you how this works, and it's transcendent. I mean, we look back to Hillary. Hillary is a student for Democrat Society, an open Marxist, an open Alinskyite, writing letters to Alinsky directly, working for law firms defending SDS terrorists back in the 60s and 70s. And then you look at her administration, and the guy that I, you know, as an intel special warfare background guy, I always fall on John Podesta. Podesta really speaks, you know, he speaks to corruption, and we see that through the WikiLeaks. But he is the hidden hand. You know, he was the chief of staff for William Jefferson Clinton. You know, he ran the Center for American Progress, which is a Marxist ideological think tank that puts forward the politically correct narrative for the world. He is a master of media manipulation, where he's hosting mainstream media people at his house. When he ran the Center for American Progress, he had 30 people on his staff dedicated to making sure media narratives were enforced. Then we see him come out of there, and he ends up working in the Obama administration as an advisor for both climate change, which is a, an attack on the industrial on industrial West, and healthcare. Those were his two big portfolios for Obama. And now here he is running the Hillary campaign. Meanwhile, his brother Tony is running the Podesta Group, taking money from all sorts of Middle East and Middle Eastern tyrants. And so it's this big, you know, it's like we saw with the old KGB, right? When the KGB became defunct, they devolved into an international criminal syndicate. We see that same type of pattern happening here, and it's because they're divorced from any sort of moral frame or any sort of truth, and for them it's all about power for the sake of power.
You know, it's funny, Rich, to have grown up during this time for me, because when I was a kid, we fully understood the threat of communism, of Marxism. We saw the effects in Russia. It was a just amazing thing to us to see, you know, the kids in schools being taught lies, just totally made up history. It almost was comical. We just couldn't imagine someone not understanding. And, of course, they were starving for truth, and Americans would get some truth in their Radio Free Europe. And so then the pendulum swung when the actual Marxists that had, were in our country, like the students for the SDS with Bernadine Dorn and, just blanking out. I know them so well. The pendulum swung so that then you were not even allowed to talk about communism, or you were, that was so yesterday, it was so silly, so provincial. And so we have even been hesitant to even use the words communist, Marxist in the last decade for fear of criticism. What would you say about that?
Well, I think we took a knee at the end of the Cold War. It was a big part of it. And as you know, as we took a knee collectively in the domestic security side in particular, the Marxist movement, while the Soviet Union fell apart, the Marxists, they still haven't stopped. And they're not going to stop. Their political ideology is pretty virulent. And what's really frightening to me is we see now the European Union and some of the some of the northern Scandinavian states in particular, through groups like the Organization for Security Cooperation in Europe and others, putting forth political correctness guidelines, but they really are attacks on what Americans would term their First Amendment right to free speech. And I mean, it's really important that Americans understand when you hear a leader say, that's not who we are, or we would never stand for that, that is exactly what, a Russian political officer would tell, somebody back in the Soviet Union. That's not who we are. We're gonna do what the party says. And the second part of the frightening is we see this convergence now between the international Islamic movement and the jihadis with the international Marxist movement at the strategic level, at the operational level, and down at the tactical level. So you can go to the OSCE conference in Warsaw and see these hate speech guidelines put forth.
Rich, I'm going to interrupt you.
Across Europe.
Let me interrupt you because we have to take a commercial break. My guest is Rich Higgins, and Vice President of Intelligence and National Security for Red LLC. We'll be back in just a second to talk about more. I hope you have your pen and your pencil out. And if you didn't get all of that, of course, you can listen to it again later and take notes, because these are things that we need to tell our children and make sure that we can stop this in every way possible. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Are you a new listener? Have you just found us and want to find out more about us? AFR.net is the place to go. Information about what's on the air right now or what programs and features are coming up can be found in our on-air schedules. There's easy access to the online store and archives of our programming, so you can discover more encouragement and information than you ever thought possible. Of course, you don't want to forget about our free smartphone app. All of that is just the tip of the iceberg. I told you, the place to go is AFR.net.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber, president, co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope was meant to be a one-time trip to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi after Hurricane Katrina. And then God got involved. And since then, we have been to 9 different states, rebuilt 1,700 homes, and it's all because we love Jesus. God tells us to love Him and love others. And that's what we do, either through 8 Days of Hope or a new ministry called Hope Reigns. Hope Reigns goes immediately after disaster. A tornado, a flood, a fire, a snowstorm. But what we notice with disasters is right after disaster, there's so many ministry opportunities. We've already been to New York, Illinois, Tennessee, Texas. So if someone's interested in 8 Days of Hope or Hope Reigns, the best place to go is our website, 8daysofhope.com. And even though we might not have an event planned the day you go to the website, if you give us your email address on our website, we'll be able to contact you about future events.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. It's obvious that Russian despot Vladimir Putin will be a major problem for our next commander-in-chief. The contenders have not addressed a chilling fact, however. Putin seems to be preparing for nuclear war, quite possibly against us. For starters, the Russians have largely put into place a brand new arsenal of thermonuclear weapons deployed on an array of modern missile, submarine, and bomber platforms designed to operate against and defeat such limited defenses as we have. These forces have increasingly conducted simulated attacks, even as Putin has repeatedly threatened to unleash them. Perhaps most chilling, millions of Russians recently participated in drills designed to test something we lack, an extensive array of underground bunkers and other civil defenses intended to protect them against nuclear conflict. We ignore these and other examples of what might be called Putin's reset at our extreme peril. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Victory, greatest victory in human history. Victory, victory, victory. Under the table, Winston's feet made convulsive movements. He had not stirred from his seat, but in his mind he was running, swiftly running. He was with the crowds outside, cheering himself deaf. He looked up again at the portrait of Big Brother, the colossus that bestrode the world, the rock against which the hordes of Asia dashed themselves in vain. He was not running or cheering any longer. He was back in the ministry of love, with everything forgiven, his soul white as snow. He was in the public dock, confessing everything, implicating everybody. He was walking down the white-tiled corridor with the feeling of walking in sunlight and an armed guard at his back. The long-hoped-for bullet was entering his brain. He gazed up at the enormous face. 40 years it had taken him to learn what kind of smile was hidden beneath the dark mustache. Oh, cruel, needless misunderstanding. Oh, stubborn, self-willed exile from the loving breast. 2 gin-scented tears trickled down the sides of his nose. But it was all right. Everything was all right. The struggle was finished. He had won the victory over himself. He loved Big Brother.
That is an excerpt, the ending, of George Orwell's novel 1984, when Winston, who had been fighting and resisting Big Brother all of those years, finally relents and decides that Big Brother, after all, is marvelous, and he loves Big Brother. And in many ways, of course, George Orwell's 1984 novel, gave us some insight. It just seemed so fantastic at the time that many people read it, but now, with this whole move to central planning and central control, it's really a frightening concept. My guest is Rich Higgins, and again, he's the, Rich is an expert on intelligence operations. He has advised the White House, Congress, foreign governments on strategy, technology, and terrorism-related matters. He's done so many things, and he is an expert at the history of the left and their subversion. He told us in the very first segment that we are at war. Whether we know it or not, we are at war. We may not be seeing, we are beginning to see some bloodshed, aren't we, Rich?
We are. We'll see more, too.
Yes, I think so, too. And we're talking about when we talk about the left, the traces of this, and I think for the purposes of understanding, Rich, it seems to me to be sufficient for us to say that at least in modern times, it was Karl Marx who wrote the treatise and sort of fleshed out the method to achieve this in a modern industrial age. So I suppose we can trace it back to that. But you were saying when we took the break that the thing that you think is one of the most frightening things is now that radical Islam is sort of merging their purposes with international Marxism. Pick that up and talk about that some more, please.
I think it's really important to understand that the international Islamic movement has a better understanding of America than most Americans do, meaning America the political idea. They understand its vulnerabilities, and we see them now operating at the strategic, operational, and tactical level. So by the strategic level, we go to the Organization for Security Cooperation in Europe. We see them put out hate speech guides. We see those guides picked up at the operational level and implemented and instantiated inside the United States government. And then at the local level, at perhaps maybe a local university, you'll see the Muslim Student Association coalescing with the Black Lives Matter movement, which is a Marxist movement at its essence, if you read their charter. And they're conducting local education seminars, protests, et cetera, et cetera, on that university. So it is a full-court international press. And I think it's created a situation where, you had the segue in from 1984 was great, because one of my favorite parts of that story is where they're interrogating him, and they ask him, if we tell you 2 + 2 = 5, then it equals 5. And then they ask him, what does 2 + 2 =? And he says 4, and they torture him again. They keep doing that to him until eventually he's willing to say whatever they want him to say. And that's the state at which the Islamic movement has assessed us. So when they say Islam is a religion of peace, it's a completely counterfactual statement, yet within the current political establishment, particularly within the Democratic Party, that is the party line. It will not be separated from the party. And so we see this system-wide, and we begin to ask ourselves, well, what are we going to do about this? And we turn to our FBI, and you look at the state of the Department of Justice, which is, again, decrepit and deformed now under this administration. And if you think... if you think the corruption of the Clinton Foundation is bad, the Obama Foundation is going to make it look like a kindergarten class. We have Obama on record saying he wants to be the first $1 billion president. He's not joking. And we need to be mindful of the fact that an election for Hillary, a vote for Hillary, is in fact a vote for massive corruption. And frankly, I don't know if the American political system can survive it.
Well, I've been on record many times, Rich, saying I don't think they can. I don't think we can. I think this is the last election, the last free election that we're going to experience. I believe that's true, unless God should do something miraculous, and He just might. But, Rich, let's go back to this, radical Islamist, or no, not the radical, why would we say that? The Islamic Movement International taking on the methods of this Marxism in language. And you said yesterday, I heard you say this, that the whole coining of the phrase Islamophobic is taken right out of the Marxist playbook. Explain that.
Well, what you're going to see is any sort of mechanism that they can put into place that will control discussion of events and to determine for you what is or is not rational. I guess the attack, the term Islamophobia, we could spend a long time going back through the history there. And there's also, at the end of the Cold War, there was you're just a Russophobe and all these other terms that have come. The point is, what they're trying to do, and it's important for your listeners to understand this, when they tell you what you can or cannot be afraid of, they're trying to limit your ability to do critical thinking and reason. And the entire American political philosophy is dependent upon you as the individual, the sovereign in the United States. So we don't have a king. You as the individual are the sovereign. You have to be capable of critical thinking and reason. If they can control that or somehow convince you that you're not allowed to think that thought, you've basically ceded your power as the sovereign over to the state, who will tell you what you can and cannot be afraid of. And we see this tactic used worldwide by Marxist, Leninist groups, by now the jihadi groups as well, to try and define what responses are acceptable by the sovereign citizen, by the sovereign, who in the United States is the American citizen.
And to take that further, to make it very practical, Rich, and we're not going to have time to discuss all of this, but it's the speech codes. It's words we dare not say. It's so-called hate speech. All of this to control our thinking and our ability to have opinions, to have our own thoughts about things. And we've talked a great deal here about the releasing of the control of the Internet to international bodies. And, of course, that happened October 31st. September 31st, I guess it was, went into the hands of an international body. And we know, those of us that are following this, that this is going to lead to control of content on the Internet. And Facebook just announced this week that they are looking for a public policy manager. Interestingly enough, now, honestly, Rich, until yesterday, I did not know. My understanding is that there are much of the control of what goes on Facebook is coming out of Dublin, Ireland. It's some Muslim Brotherhood operatives who are controlling a lot of what's being said. But now in print, Facebook says this: they're looking for an analytical thinker with experience in academia, business, or research to join our policy management team. You will be responsible for understanding and mitigating how hate groups and terrorist groups attempt to utilize Facebook and Instagram. Okay, that sounds pretty good. We don't want hate groups and terrorist organizations manipulating Facebook, right, Rich? What are they really saying?
I think it depends on who says who's the terrorist, right? I mean, if this goes to the core of what the counter state's objectives are. So when I say the counter state, I'm talking about the illegitimate authority that these groups take by putting themselves in positions where they're advisory councils, they're your moderate advisors. In their worldview, to a Muslim Brotherhood guy, I am the violent extremist. And so the question becomes, at what point do these, the legitimate political authorities begin to listen to these illegitimate political authorities, the advisory boards, the counter state, in determining who is or is not actually creating this hate, is conducting actual hate speech. The entire concept of hate speech is un-American in and of its face. So the structure that these guys are putting in place needs to be understood. Is they're going to come to you. The counter state comes to you in the form of an advisor, a cultural advisor, who is going to skew your thinking because you've now said, I don't need to do critical thinking because I don't want to be an Islamophobe. you could then hand the keys to your house, the keys to the castle, over to this advisor, and at which point you are now his, you are now basically not his equal. You know, you are now his, you're his subordinate, and he is going to tell you what you can and cannot do. So Zuckerberg and the folks at Facebook who will listen to this group out of Dublin, which is, you know, basically their 10 Muslim Brotherhood affiliated people informing this, they will be, you know, Facebook will be adhering to Muslim Brotherhood determinate content guidelines. And, you know, and it's not a, it's not lost on me that, you know, that Facebook thing came out literally, what, 3 weeks after the internet was transferred over to this international body. And it's not just Facebook, it's other social media platforms as well. So,
well, interesting. It is. And we know that Facebook recently had a big discussion on whether they wanted to delete the Facebook posts of Donald Trump and label it hate speech. And it went all the way up to the top, and I believe it was Zuckerberg who nixed it because Trump was a presidential candidate and they thought it would cause too much trouble. But they wanted to do that, and I think people need to understand, almost everyone listening to me uses Facebook, Rich. This is a tangible way they can understand, people listening can understand how this control will manifest itself. People will be identified as haters, and your posts will be deleted and controlled, and your thinking will thus be controlled. And as a matter of fact, you know, the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, carries water for all of these, and that's a whole other issue. But they just come out with their own treatise identifying 15 Islamophobes, and Frank Gaffney is one, Brigitte Gabriel, Ann Corcoran. It's a whole long list of people you and I know and respect. It's dangerous. Right. These are dangerous times, aren't they, Rich?
Right. It's important to note that being labeled an Islamophobe by a Muslim Brotherhood or Al-Qaeda-aligned organization, that is a death threat. They're accusing you of slandering Islam, and that is a death threat in Islam. So, you know, it should not be taken lightly. We hear, oh, you know, he's been labeled an Islamophobe, and we think it's some sort of political speak. It's not. It's definitely not to a jihadi.
Rich, we just have a minute and a half left, actually. They're millennials. What would you say to millennials? They've never heard anything like this. They have no basis of knowledge in which to interpret this. How can we make this approachable for them to understand?
I think one of the great mistakes of the conservative movement in the country has been the tactical focus on what they're doing. There really seems to be no long-term strategic plan, and I think, I know there are conservative groups out there on the campuses and universities, and they need to get active. We're starting to see some of that, but I think, you know, at the national level, the conservative movement really needs to jump in. And the one thing I would tell your listeners is now is not the time to be afraid. It is time to get faithful. It is time to reflect in prayer. It is time to fight the fight that you can fight wherever you are, and to, you know, to teach your children and your grandchildren about the American political founding, and to go back and to sit down and read the Declaration with them. You know, do it before, you know, instead of saying grace tonight before dinner, sit down and read the Declaration and understand what those men were actually speaking to, and the true nature of the founding of this country.
Yeah. And the truth is, amazingly, even in the Soviet Union, after 60 years of lies, the truth broke through. Now, we could talk about the condition of the Russians, but at least they have the opportunity to know what the truth is. Whether they choose, now they have free will, just like the rest of us. But at one time, they didn't have any choice at all. But truth does break through all of these lies, as impossible as it seems sometimes. So we're going to chip away at that and continue to speak it. And we encourage each and every one of you to do the same and speak it to your children. I don't care if they hold you in derision, if they don't believe you. Tell them the truth. They will remember at some point in their lives. Rich Higgins, thank you so much. I do appreciate your time always. Thank you. And take care.
All right. Thanks, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.